Please note that this is an extended Amateur Radio Newsline report and contains three breaks. Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1880 with a release date of August 23rd, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. A Trans-Pacific Emergency Communications Demonstration will involve United States MARS. FCC and Industry Canada reach spectrum sharing agreements. The ARRL says no to TCB expansion. Brockton, Massachusetts takes an unlicensed broadcaster off the air. And a young ham is honored at the Huntsville Ham Fest. Find out details here on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1880, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Vero Beach, Florida, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
A Trans-Pacific link-up to test ham radio emergency communications is about to take place. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
Members of the Military Auxiliary Radio System, or MARS, here in the United States, will link up with amateur radio operators on the Asian continent on Monday, August 26th. This in a unique test of ham radio's ability to provide communications assistance in the event of a major trans-Pacific natural disaster. In the exercise scenario, volunteer MARS operators will establish a communication path with civilian hams in the fictitious nation of Pacifica. This connection will be used to gather information for any needed emergency relief operations halfway around the world. Traffic will be sent to the United States Pacific Command and then to the Pentagon Chief of Information Office via an open blog operated by the Department of Defense for international messaging. Information collected will be used to develop possible humanitarian assistance and disaster response procedures to assist Pacifica following the catastrophic scenario. The Military Auxiliary Radio System is a Department of Defense-sponsored program established as a separately managed and operated program by the United States Army, Navy, and Air Force. It is a civilian auxiliary consisting primarily of United States amateur radio operators who are interested in assisting the military with communications on a local, national, and international basis. This as an adjunct to normal lines of military communications. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP, on this side of the Pacific, in Scottsdale, Arizona.
For those who might be wondering where make-believe nation Pacifica might really be located, we suggest that you might want to think of Nepal. The United States Federal Communications Commission and Telecommunications Regulator Industry Canada have agreed on three interim spacing sharing arrangements covering three types of wireless communications operations along the U.S. and Canada border. The arrangements govern various bands involving air-to-ground communications, fixed operations, and specialized mobile radio services. In the way of fixed services, the FCC, the U.S. National Telecommunications and Information Administration, and Industry Canada struck a sharing agreement governing 71, 76, 81 through 86, and 94.1 through 95 gigahertz. This is extended to facilitate deployment of fixed services within the border area. Such services include backhaul for mobile broadband networks, high-speed wireless local area networks, and broadband internet access over high-bandwidth point-to-point links. At 454.6625 to 454.9875 and 459.6625 to 459.9875 megahertz, a statement of intent allows for creation of a nationwide digital system covering the sharing and coordination of spectrum for general aviation air-to-ground services. It provides for sharing of spectrum when operations are located within distances ranging from roughly 300 to 360 miles of the common border. With regard to specialized mobile radio services at 896 to 901 and 935 to 940 megahertz, the new arrangement governs the sharing and coordination of within roughly 60 miles of the common border and simplifies the criteria for permitting secondary users in the band. Now, this is intended to enable more efficient use of the spectrum while protecting primary users. This particular agreement, called Arrangement U, may become part of the larger treaty or replacement agreement governing services operating above 30 megahertz. The operational provisions of this arrangement will be applied on an interim basis pending further review. The ARRL has told the FCC to not act with haste to delegate greater authority to private telecommunications certification bodies, also known as TCBs. This in the area of granting certification to electronic gear regulated by the agency. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with more.
In reply comments filed July 31st on ET Docket 13-44, which is an FCC proposal to alter its Part 2 equipment certification process, the ARRL says that it agrees with the National Association of Broadcasters, which has expressed concern about the current level of telecommunications certification bodies in regard to their performance record. As such, it advised against outsourcing all equipment authorization functions to these TCBs. The ARRL went on to say that it knows that this is not a docket proceeding that directly affects amateur radio. However, it notes that the track record of TCB certification of RF devices in terms of errors and ill-advised grants of certification is abysmal. The ARRL notes that the FCC lab staff constantly has to review and set aside TCB grants of RF equipment. In closing, the ARRL says that it is concerned that the reliability of telecommunications certifications bodies exhibited so far is not sufficiently high to justify the proposed extensive deregulation of this evaluation of more complex types of equipment authorizations, this where interference potential is significant or where RF exposure is an issue. The FCC equipment authorization program exists in part to ensure that RF devices imported, marketed, or used in the United States comply with the agency's rules and that they not cause any harmful interference. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
At present, the FCC still conducts evaluations for initial approval of devices requiring certification. It also approves certain exempt equipment, including devices that operate in UHF bands, on which amateur radio has a secondary allocation. The Council of Europe Radio Amateur Club says that the long-planned 5C0 CE operation from Morocco has been shut down before it even got started. This because of what appears to be either a policy decision or some form of bureaucratic red tape. Francis Kremer, who is F6FQK, is the founder and member of the Council of Europe Radio Amateur Clubs, charged with public relations. In an email to Amateur Radio Newsline and other ham radio information outlets on Sunday night, August the 18th, Kremer said that the operation sponsored by the council and slated for August 20th and 21st had been canceled only 16 hours before the team was to depart to Morocco. This due to what he termed as a last-minute blockage by the president of the Royal Association of Radio Amateurs of Morocco. Kremer's email went on to state that the de-expedition team had received their Moroccan licenses several months ago. Also, that hams in Morocco have been preparing to assist with this operation since last year. F6FQK's email said that the notice from the Moroccan National Society leader gave no reason for the decision to block the operations from taking place. He also notes that each member of the council's de-expedition team had paid his own expenses, and when came of the forced cancellation, it was too late to recover those monies. Kremer called the incident very damaging to the ham radio community.
Some breaking news just in. The new FCC regulatory fee of $16.10 to apply for an amateur radio vanity call sign went into effect today, Friday, August 23rd. Earlier this year, the FCC had proposed upping the vanity fee from $15 to $15.20, but in the report and order in MD Docket 13-140 released August 12th, the Commission offered no explanation for the even higher $16.10 fee. Also, in fiscal year 2014, the FCC will require that all regulatory fee payments be made electronically. Jim?
Serving you 52 weeks a year, every year since 1977, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KATIW repeater serving Paw Paw, Michigan. Famed actor and comedian Dick Van Dyke, who over the years has supported ham radio, escaped injury when he was pulled from a burning car on a Los Angeles area freeway. It happened on Monday afternoon, August the 19th. Dick Van Dyke was driving on the 101 freeway at approximately 2 in the afternoon when his Jaguar caught fire near Parkway Calabasas. That's about 25 or so miles west of downtown L.A. Van Dyke was reportedly unhurt and did not require any medical help. Starting way back in the 1970s, the now 87-year-old entertainer appeared in a number of amateur radio public service announcements.
Don't worry, it's only the radio. This is Dick Van Dyke, and frankly, I get scared when I think of earthquake, fire, flood, or hurricane. We almost always lose our normal means of communication. But who's there, ready to help? The radio hands. If you'd like free information about the amateur radio service, write the American Radio Relay League, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Over.
He was also seen in the opening scene of the 1979 ARRL promotional film titled The World of Amateur Radio, produced by Dave Bell, W6AQ. And for those living in the Los Angeles area for many years, he's been the voice of the identifier of a local 2-meter repeater. Apparently, Van Dyke never lost his sense of humor, even though the car was in an apparent total loss. Later in the day, he reportedly tweeted a post on Twitter which simply said, "Used Jag for sale, real cheap." Brockton, Massachusetts did its own investigating after it started hearing music over its alert system. In the end, it was not the FCC that came to rescue, but rather a police officer and a political leader from the city. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has this very interesting story.
The incident took place on Wednesday, August 14th, when firefighters began hearing music coming from the speakers in the firehouse that are used to alert a call-out. Kevin Galligan is the city deputy fire chief. He called for the assistant officer Scott Ullman, who is the Brockton Police Department two-way radio specialist. Ullman is listed in the FCC database as holding the call sign KC1AGW. Also responding to help was Brockton City Councilor Dennis D. Napoli. The two arrived equipped with radio direction finding gear and used it to locate the source of the interfering signal as coming from a rooftop antenna of a one-story building directly across the street from the fire station. Measurements proved it was the source of the unlicensed signal on 88.9 megahertz. Ullman said they approached a group of men behind the building and asked who owned the radio equipment. The men were at first evasive, but when Ullman climbed on the roof with a pair of wire cutters, they quickly located the owner. The station was immediately shut down. The next day, the antenna and radio equipment were gone. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, and 8WB, This Week Portable 2, in New York.
It appears that unlicensed radio stations have in recent times proliferated in Brockton. Both DiNapoli and Ullman said they were aware of several currently operating in the city. The FCC has issued a citation and order to a Fremont, California company known as DNJ Radio. This for its alleged violations of the agency's rules by marketing non-certified amplifiers and kits via its website under the trade name RM Italy. The agency's San Francisco office was assigned to investigate the matter. It says that it found that the DNJ Radio Company was offering RM Italy brand linear amplifiers and amplifier kits that were capable of operations on both 11 and 10 meters, and they'd not been certified for sale in the United States. It also said that a disclaimer posted on DNJ Radio's website said that the devices were only for industrial, scientific, medical, or export use, and was not acceptable because using them on 11 meters would violate FCC rules. The FCC ordered DNJ Radio to immediately discontinue marketing these unauthorized devices. They gave the company the usual 30 days to provide a list of amplifiers imported or marketed under the name of RM Italy. It also told DNJ Radio that any future violations could result in sanctions of up to $16,000 for each future violation. Well, just when we thought it was all over, once again, Lights Squared is back in the news. Or more accurately, the money people behind Lights Squared who, well, want their investment back and are suing those that oppose the Lights Squared project to try and get it back. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has the details.
Backers of the failed attempt by Light Squared to establish a nationwide satellite-based high-speed broadband network are suing those who successfully opposed the plan. This with word that Harbinger Capital Partners and several other entities associated with the failed Light Squared 4G broadband network have filed a lawsuit against Deere & Company, Garmin, Trimble Navigation, the U.S. GPS Industry Council, and the Coalition to Save Our GPS. On February 14, 2012, the Federal Communications Commission refused to give final approval to Light Squared's planned national broadband network. This after it was informed by the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, that there was no practical way to mitigate potential interference at that time. The NTIA is the federal agency that coordinates spectrum uses for the military and other government entities. The newly filed litigation by Harbinger Capital claims that the defendants failed to disclose information about GPS interference problems caused by an adjacent frequency spectrum that Light Squared was allocated to use. The plaintiffs are seeking $1.9 billion in damages. More about this court action is on the web at tinyurl.com/GPS-lawsuit. I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
A spokesman for the defendant, Trimble Navigation, says that the lawsuit is without merit and that the responsibility for Harbinger's losses rests squarely with Harbinger. He adds that the action will be vigorously defended. Hams are needed to provide communications for the head of the Charles Regatta in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on October the 19th and 20th. If you're in the area and have some free time on either of those days, please take your web browser to tinyurl.com/regatta-volunteer-2013. Create an account, and in the comments section, please note what your current certifications are. If you have any questions about volunteering, please call David Wolf, KG1H, via email to dkwolf@comcast.net. The National Association of Broadcasters has put out a call for speakers for its 2014 NAB show to be held next April in Las Vegas, Nevada. While the gathering encourages all types of submissions, technical papers are offered exclusively within the Broadcasting Engineering Conference program. Proposals are due no later than October the 18th. Those featured original content, research, or rarely seen yet highly regarded speakers will receive favorable consideration. More information is online now at tinyurl.com/NAB-2014-speakers. More than 93,000 media and entertainment professionals from 156 countries attended the 2013 NAB show. Some names in the news. First up is well-known DXer Marty Lane, OH2BH. He was a speaker at the Frederikshavn Ham Radio Exhibition this past June. His keynote lecture, titled Changing Times in the DX Hunt, is now available, complete with slides and audio, at tinyurl.com/OH2BH-DX-talk. And after 26 years with the space agency, NASA astronaut Michael Foal, KB5UAC, has retired. Starting back in 1977, Foal had spent a total of 375 days in space during six space shuttle missions and later assignments aboard two space stations. This included 145 days on the Russian Mir space station in 1997 and 194 days aboard the International Space Station as commander of Expedition No. 8 from October 2003 to April 2004. He also took part in four spacewalks, also known as EVAs, totaling almost 23 hours. Makoto Mori, JE3HHT, has made his popular MMTTY, MMSSTV, and MMVARI amateur radio software available as an open source enabling anyone to experiment with the code. These three software packages were originally developed to support RTTY, Scan TV, PSK, and MFSK, respectively. And as of August the 1st, all of these applications are released to open source development under the LGPL license. More information on these programs is on the web at mm-open.org. Carl Smith, N4AA, who is the editor of QRZ-DX and the DX magazine, says that due to popular demand that many countries have been added to this year's Most Wanted DX Entity Survey. To vote for your favorite, simply fill out the survey form found at tinyurl.com/2013-most-wanted-survey. The deadline for the entry is October the 15th, with the results likely to be published in the January and February 2014 issue of the DX magazine. This is Communications News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Hams involved in emergency communications take note. Australia's most powerful computer, designed primarily for use by scientists who calculate vast amounts of data to make forecasts and pinpoint extreme weather, has been unveiled. The machine weighs in at 70 tons. It has 57,000 processing cores. That's the equivalent of about 15,000 state-of-the-art laptop computers. It also carries 160 terabytes of memory, which would equal that of about 30,000 average modern laptops. The Australian National University of Canberra has named the supercomputer Reijin, after the Japanese god of thunder, lightning, and storms. More of it's on the web, tinyurl.com/vk-super-calculator. The Voyager 1 interstellar probe may soon be gone from our galaxy, but it's certainly not to be forgotten. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the latest celestial wanderer that's still in radio contact with Earth.
The latest data from the Voyager 1 spacecraft, as reported in a recent edition of Science Journal, suggests it is surfing right on the very edge of our sun's domain. It's currently some 18.5 billion kilometers from Earth, and at a point in space where particles streaming away from our star have reduced to a trickle. Particles flying towards it from interstellar space, by contrast, have jumped markedly in the past year. It all points to an imminent departure, which would make Voyager the first man-made object to cross into the space between the stars. In 2004, Voyager reached a turbulent region referred to as the heliosheath, where particles bounced around in all directions. It was expected this would be the final stage before the leap to interstellar space. But, as has been the case throughout this 35-year mission, Voyager had other surprises. Last year, the probe detected what appears to be a discrete boundary layer that its control team calls the heliosheath depletion region. This is described as a kind of magnetic highway where particles on the inside of our solar system can exit easily, and the galactic cosmic ray particles on the outside can enter. The team is now watching the direction of these field lines very carefully. Currently, they are oriented east to west and wound into a spiral by our ever-rotating sun. But when Voyager finally breaks into the interstellar space, they are expected to shift dramatically, running north to south. At that time, the challenge of exploring interstellar space will have begun. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
Launched way back in 1977, the Voyager 1 probe has now traveled so far from the home that its radio data transmissions take some 17 hours to arrive at the U.S. Space Agency's receiving network here on Earth. NASA says it's now accepting proposals for the CubeSat launch initiative. Developers whose proposals are selected may have the opportunity to see their design launched as an auxiliary payload on a mission between 2014 and 2017. CubeSat investigations should be consistent with NASA's strategic plan and educational vision and goals. As such, the research mission of the mini-satellites should address specific aspects of science, exploration, technology development, education, or operations. NASA will not provide funding for the development of the small satellites, and selection does not guarantee a launch opportunity. Proposals must be submitted electronically no later than 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November the 26th. From the submissions, NASA will select the best proposals by February the 7th, 2014. For additional information on NASA's CubeSat Launch Initiative Program, please take your web browser to go.nasa.gov/13VCBMZ. The United Kingdom South Yorkshire Repeater Group says that GB7YD port A of its 23-centimeter digital data system has been granted a notice of variation from the regulator Ofcom. This to permit it to become the first amateur radio group in the UK to implement the complete ICOM A, B, C, and G2 system. GB7YD port A is on 1241.075 MHz. Details are on the UK Repeater Net website, www.syrg.net. Greg Stallman, KJ6KO, reports that his 2-meter, 903.293 and 1296.262 MHz beacons located in California Grid Square CM88WS are back up and running. For now, the 432 MHz unit is down for repair, as is the 222 MHz unit. More information as it's available. A new propagation beacon is on the air from Italy. The W9GDC/B beacon in grid square number JM78SD near the city of Messina and operating on 70.091 MHz using 10 watts out into a big wheel omnidirectional horizontal antenna. The beacon is frequency and time locked to the GPS system and transmits its call sign, call, and grid locator in Morse at regular intervals. QSN reports are always welcome. In DX, VK6DXI will be active as 9N8DX/2 from Kuala Lumpur between now and September the 3rd. His operation will be limited since this is a business trip, but he'll be operating some CW during his local evening hours, and you can QSL by SP5UAF. E78 Alpha is currently operational from Jordan as JY9FC. He's reported to be active on all of the high-frequency bands, and you can QSL to E73Y. DL1AL, now active as 5A1AL near Tripoli. He's told the Ohio Penn DX newsletter that his stay in Libya will depend on a holiday and business-style operation. He's recently been heard on 20 meters, on 40, on 30, and 6 meters CW using 20 on sideband. QSL via DL1AL. G7COD is operating stroke EA8 from Gran Canaria until August the 31st. He's active on all bands, 6 through 30 meters, QSL as directed by the operator. N6TJ will be on the air from Ascension Island in September, operating with the call sign ZD8Z. He'll be active on high-frequency bands with no specific modes mentioned. If you work him, please QSL via AI4U. An international team will be active as C82DX from Mozambique between October the 15th through the 22nd. The operation will be on 160 through 10 meters using CW, single sideband, and RTTY. QSL and other information is on the web, c82dx.com. Lastly, WB9FMC tells Newsline that he'll be in Minnesota from August the 25th to the 31st. He'll attempt to qualify a United States island for the U.S. Islands on the Air Award. His two possible choices are Cedar Island in grid square number MN012 and possibly Star Island in grid square MN014. This operation requires 25 contacts, two of which must be different DXCC entities. Listen out for him on the 40 and 20-meter CW QRP frequencies. He says that more about the United States Islands on the Air program can be found at usislands.org. Time for you to identify your station. This is the Amateur Radio Newsline. And we'll be back in just 5 seconds. And finally this week, Saturday, August 17th, was likely a very special day in the life of 16-year-old Padraig Lissandru, KC9UUS, because on that day, he was at the Huntsville Amateur Radio Hamfest in Alabama, where he was presented the 2013 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham Year Award. Our own Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, was the host and the MC.
What Padraig Lissandru, KC9UUS, has accomplished in his brief time as a radio amateur makes him a role model for others, no matter what your age, to follow, and is the reason that he has been chosen as the 2013 Young Ham of the Year Award recipient. So, without any further ado, let me present Mr. Lissandru with this plaque. I'll read it for you. Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year awarded to Padraig Lissandru, KC9UUS, in recognition of his dedication to the amateur radio service, presented jointly by Amateur Radio Newsline, Yaesu USA Corporation, and CQ Magazine, Saturday, August 17, 2013. Padraig, this is for you. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Padraig Lissandru, KC9UUS.
In his acceptance speech, KC9UUS took the time to thank those who were his mentors and brought him into the world of amateur radio.
It's a real honor to receive this award, but I obviously didn't do it alone. Oh, okay. So I have to thank Neil Rapp, WB9PBG, Scott Wright, K0MD, the ARRL Education Fund, and Radio Club of America. Without them, I really couldn't have gotten this far.
2012 winner Aaron King, AK4JG, wanted to be on hand to congratulate Pogrig in person, but due to other commitments, she couldn't make it. So she sent her congratulations in an email to Don that read,
"Holding the title for the past year has been an honor and a wonderful experience, and I'm very excited to pass the torch on to the 2013 Young Ham of the Year. Knowing the appreciation of the ham radio community is a reward in itself, and I'm proud to pass that on to you. I sincerely wish I could have attended your ceremony in person to hand off the award, and I'm sorry I was unable to make it. Huntsville is my favorite ham fest, so I'm sure you'll have a great weekend with the awesome hams there. Congratulations." And that's Aaron King, AK4JG.
Next up was Rich Moseson, W2VU of CQ Magazine, one of the major corporate underwriters of the award, and he had some words of encouragement for all in the hobby and praise for all of the younger members of Ham Radio Society.
I've said this on this stage many times before, but I continue to say it because I continue to be impressed with the quality of the nominees. People who are concerned about the future of our hobby need not be concerned, because we have great young people like Pat who are coming up through the ranks, who will be our next generation of leaders, and I am sure that the hobby will be in very good hands as we move on through the years.
Rich then presented Pat Drag with a gift at a week at Space Camp Huntsville he can use at some future date. W2VU was followed by Dennis Mockenbacher, K7BV of Yaesu, who had a gift here for KC9UUS.
Believe it or not, he does have time for ham radio, but he's going to have less as he starts going into college and doing more and more travel. And at Yaesu, we'd like you to be able to take ham radio with you. And to do that, we're going to present you with our FT817ND, which is a 5-watt radio, but all mode, and it goes from 160 all the way up to 440. And that will take care of just about everything you can run into. So often we see young people become very, very active in amateur radio. Then they go off to school and they can't take it with them. This will allow you to take it with them. And we'd like to give that to you with best wishes and congratulations from Yaesu.
There's a lot more to tell you, but not enough time in the half-hour newscast. So for those of you who would like to hear the entire 2013 Young Ham of the Year ceremony, we're posting it all on our website in an MP3 format. Just go to www.arnewsline.org and click on the Extra tab to download the full 20-minute file. Meanwhile, some thank yous are in order. First to our major corporate underwriters, Yaesu USA, CQ Publishing, and Heil Sound. Also to our new prize donator, Emmett Hohensee, W0QH of Radio Wavez Antennas. And our sincere thanks to Dave Bell, W6AQ, who underwrites the Young Ham of the Year Award plaque. To Tom Medlin, W5KUB, who provided a live video and audio stream of the presentation. And to our great friends of the past two decades at the Huntsville Hamfest and its leader, Charlie Emerson, N4OKL. And last but no means least, to our Young Ham of the Year Judging Committee, headed up by Mark Abramovich, NT3V. All of you are part of the family that makes the Young Ham of the Year Award a reality year after year, and we hope to see you again in 2014. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at our editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.